ever open a champagne bottle?
I have seen it done before.
Good. Be sure you keep all the glasses full.
Live from the Gulf Coast, Central, West Texas, you're listening to Free Drinks Next Week, the number one podcast at this address.
Birthday. Mm-hmm. Hey, Christopher, like, when you ask him the days of the week, he's like, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, birthday! I'm like, man, I like your outlook. You're an optimist by trade.
Hey, when you're a kid, that's pretty much all you have going for you, though. So
yeah, you look forward to your birthday, and it takes forever because, like, as a kid, you think it's like, okay, you're gonna turn 4 next, so that's 48 months of your life. You have to wait a quarter of the existence that you've already had for the next birthday. Like, now that we're 35 or whatever, it's like, it's nothing to get to the next birthday. It's like, oh shit, it snuck up on me again. But as a kid, I just remember how long summers used to feel, especially that first year in elementary, when you're off for the summer, and you're just like, this is amazing. It's almost exhausting. And by high school, you're like, ah, the fun's coming to the end.
Exactly. I agree completely.
I gotta go back. But all right, so have you outlined your show, or when do we get a debut or a date for the new show or a name? Do we even have a name for it yet?
No. Obviously, messing around on GarageBand, that was kind of step one. So I don't have any licensed music in my in my intro or my outro. Step two is getting the music from, let's see, GarageBand into iTunes, which I've done. And then getting it onto my laptop where I've recorded a couple shows. So, and then getting it onto Audacity and getting it all put together. So, yeah, a couple weeks, just because I didn't really like any of my first 5 or 6 shows I recorded. So probably give me another couple weeks just to find one that I actually enjoy.
So do we have any chance for topics or anything?
Pretty much. I've just gotten on and reviewed things as they've popped up and as I've kind of done them. I've got some reviews for this week. I went and saw Jumanji. You know, watched a couple new Netflix shows, but I haven't reviewed any of those on there yet. So far, it's just been trashing restaurants here locally and fun stuff like that. So,
well, let me go ahead and do the intro, and then we can get back to this conversation. So welcome to Free Drinks Next Week, the number one wine podcast at this address. FDNW brings you weekly conversations on something different over a bottle of something different. Join us each week to discover new wine, beer, liquor, stories, and things that make us tick. One part alcohol, two part stories, shaken, stirred with just a hit of entertainmentology. You can find Free Drinks Next Week on iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook, and our website to be named later. Give us a thumbs up on Stitcher Radio, like us on Facebook, and leave a review on our iTunes page. I'd personally like to welcome our co-hosts, Mike and Cassie and Christy, and little Chris might join us intermittently. And right now, Christy is listening, but she's on mute on her way home, so she will join us. And Cassie is unwinding from her vacation and being on a cruise in the open waters, getting out of the Texas cold. But we do have the co-host, Mike, who was just getting into, before we really started recording, the topic of branding, reviews, and everything else of a pending show that he's hosted, produced, built, and coming out. You could probably also hear he's probably the best sounding person this week on the microphone. It's probably going to make me redo my microphone setup so I could catch up.
I highly doubt that. I think you guys still sound pretty clear to me. So,
well, and so you were indicating that the new show you have is going to be about reviews. Are you going to publish the episode on Jumanji?
I'm going to review Jumanji on here because I've had at least one shot at it. Let's put it that way. So I think the Jumanji review will be on here. Let's put it that way. I'll cover it on here.
Okay. Well, I know one of the co-hosts who's will join us later. I know for sure she hasn't seen Jumanji and wouldn't want to spoil it for her if she is planning to see it. So did we want to start on the entertainment section this week first of what you've been watching, what you're reviewing? And we can even start with you, whether it's the restaurant or Jumanji or both that you wanted to start with.
I'll start off with what I've watched this week, you know, since we tend to have a little bit more, I guess, opinions about that anyways and stuff. Yeah, so this week, movie-wise, went and saw Jumanji. Thought it was pretty good, obviously geared more towards kids, but, you know, all the acting's pretty decent in it. Camera work's pretty decent in it. Plot, well, you know, it's kind of hard to pick apart plot on this, because if you haven't seen the first one, it's a board game that kind of comes to life and takes over the world, right? Well, this one is a video game that kind of comes to life and takes over the world. And I definitely feel like it was probably one of the better video game movies I've ever seen. Comparing it to, you know, movies like, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Silent Hill, some movies like that. In that it had the mechanics of a video game inside the movie itself. You know, we've all seen the previews, they've got three lives. And I thought that was kind of, that was more representative of playing games than, like, a lot of these video game movies that they just try to take the story and then make a movie out of it, you know? And so I definitely feel like it accomplished more of the video game mentality than any other video game movie that I've seen, except for maybe, man, that really bad Doom movie that was out a couple years ago. The movie itself was bad, but it had one really kick-ass part, i.e. where it went into first-person mode and, like, he's just kind of running through the corridors killing everything. And I feel like that's pretty, once again, representative of the, like, actually playing video games, for instance. So, all in all, really liked Jumanji. And then this week on Netflix, the only thing I started watching but haven't finished yet is that new series, It's the End of the Effing World. it has to kind of be watched to be enjoyed and stuff like that. Definitely a crazy series so far, let's put it that way, and I don't want to spoil it. Other than that, I did finish the last two episodes of Black Mirror Season 4. Crocodile is extremely, like, messed up, i.e., like, oh man, how far are they going to go with this? Hang the DJ, I thought, was one of the better ones ever, because for those of you who don't know, Black Mirror is like a premise, it's like a anthology series where they take different concepts and kind of project them out and stuff. Hang the DJ had this kind of conversation about, like, you know, a matchmaking service. I thought it was pretty good. Metalhead was all black and white, so that was really cool. And then Black Museum was kind of an effed up anthology within an anthology by itself. So definitely, I don't know. I recommend watching Black Mirror Season 4, probably the best season I've seen so far. So, and that's all I've seen so far this week.
Well, I did see, I don't think we did a review for Jumanji on the last episode, and we also saw that, Cassie and I, about 2 weeks ago. And one of the things I did like about it, as you mentioned in your review, were the video dynamics of the game. Like, and I'm not spoiling anything by mentioning this, but in the beginning, when they're dropped into Jumanji world, they meet a guide who drops them off, but he only has pre-programmed sayings that no matter what, he starts over if you ask any other questions. And if you grew up playing video games, especially coming from, like, the cartridge system to the smaller disc, then those were your games. Like, there was only a couple sayings they could say, even if it was open world. It really wasn't that open, because you knew what they were going to say regardless. So it's little things like that that maybe appealed more to me than I thought it would for the movie.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, that's how we kind of figured out, like, okay, who's got the quest in this town, for instance, right? It's like you'd go up to people, and sometimes you'd go up to them, like, a half dozen times, trying to figure out, all right, like, who's got the next step, or what's the next stage of this, right? And so it's one of those things to where I definitely felt like that was the most, that was the best part of the movie, is it actually, I think, did a great job of showcasing what's being, what it's like being inside of a video game.
No, you're absolutely right. That was a fantastic aspect of it. And really just, I still think Jack Black, I expected The Rock and Kevin Hart to have great chemistry and dynamics in the movie. Jack Black's character was completely unexpected throughout the movie,
yes,
and that was the running joke throughout it. That it's not quite up there with Tropic Thunder running joke, but it's pretty close in terms of the character that he's playing. That it's not what you're used to for that character, but it is making a point. Like, oh my god! what else have I been watching? So I did start watching Black Mirror. I didn't start from the third episode of the first season once I checked out. I did start on the fourth season since I knew that was going to be a topic continued. So far, I've seen four episodes. I fell asleep during two. That's not because of the episodes. That's because I've been watching them late at night once I'm done with work. I really liked the opening of season four with the USS Callister, especially after watching Star Trek and Star Wars. Just that concept of it, of being inside of a video game and having that control of where we're going with that and what are the possible consequences. That was fantastic. Also, the second episode, Archangel, I liked it. I liked the concept. I get the point they were trying to make. It was just kind of stupid to me. And Crocodile is where I've taken a break. And I keep hearing all the references to Hang the DJ, so I need to finally pick up and listen. Oh, no, I did watch Hang the DJ. That one was pretty awesome. That one kind of made me think of just going back to, like, that age of when you're dating. Like, what are you really looking for? And seeing those relationships and how they were built inside of it. So, yeah, Hang the DJ was fantastic.
Do you kind of get the impression that Hang the DJ, that kind of happens to a some degree right now inside of, like, an app or inside of Match.com? I mean, in terms of the 1,000 simulations and 98... The system, as it were, and got together. Like, I mean, not to that degree, obviously, to, like, sentient people inside of a computer program, but, like, is that what Match does? It basically takes two profiles and, like, runs 1,000 words out of each profile and is like, oh, if 900 out of them are compatible words, I mean, then you've got a 90% match right now.
Well, the answer is yes. That I definitely think that's what they're using. It's all statistic generation. That's how they're matching you up, is using algorithms. That whenever you sign up and they make you take that questionnaire or interest, they see what has happened in the past. So I guarantee now, Match is better now than it was the first 2 years it came out, because now they have examples to go off of. That they could say, between these couples, when we found out one likes to drink while doing handstands, and the other likes to do garden work, those type of couples work together 99% of the time, so we're going to present that in the list of possible options. Mm-hmm. That part gets defined as they're able to segment it a lot more. I really don't want to give away kind of the end of the episode, but it is about dating, and the algorithm... I had a mind-blowing moment when we got to the end of Hang the DJ. Like, that's probably... The first episode got me back in it, like, okay, cool, I'm in. Hang the DJ, getting me there, got me all the way back in the series. And now I'm going to start watching the show again. I'll start from season 2, watch 3 as well, and catch up with everybody else.
From what I've heard of people who like the show... Well, this season 4 has, like, 2 or 3 of the top 5 episodes ever. but each season's got like a really good episode and stuff. And this was the standout episode from this season by far. So.
Yeah, absolutely. But what else am I watching? I've watched a lot of NBA this week. This is the first week I've been back towards that, watching the NBA. And I did finish The Shield, which is definitely up there, probably in my top 20 shows of all time, just the structure, but I think I mentioned that last week, that I finished it. And I'm still starting Peaky Blinders. I'm only 3 weeks in for season 4. One of the things that I am looking forward to is probably just buying movies. But I did watch the national championship game this year for football. Alabama, Georgia. Of course, Georgia snagged defeat from the jaws of victory, as every team from that state does. I really enjoyed the halftime show. That they had an indoor halftime show of the classic marching bands doing their thing at a big college football game, and then outside on the stage they had Kendrick Lamar perform, which, if you're going to build a stadium with taxpayer money and spend $1 billion, you better have more events around big events, like an outside stage. So you can get 40,000 people into the stadium. Then you can get another 20,000 people to stand outside in 30-degree weather to watch a show. So now all those businesses in the area are definitely getting a benefit from the stadium, because there's 60,000 people down there at once. So I like it for that part, and I'm just a Kendrick Lamar fan. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, okay. I've taken some time to go over some of the things I was thinking during the national title game. First, kicking off with the halftime show and everything. I'm slightly concerned. I thought Kendrick did a great job, and of course, representing that kind of, I'm going to say, popular form of hip hop right now, which is like the kind of the ATL scene and stuff like that. I think he did an excellent job. His music's on point. I think. Did he perform Element, didn't he?
Yeah, he did perform Element, but he also performed Humble. He performed DNA. He performed, like, all the top hits from it except that one Rihanna one.
Well, yeah, obviously, I think that probably would have taken everybody even more out of it. My main concerns, not with the performance, are this becoming a thing at college football games? Because as we've kind of talked about in the past, college football is already not very profitable for a lot of teams and a lot of schools and everything. And I don't want to see people start to look at it as like, oh, well, how do we get people back in the seats? Let's spend money on like this massive entertainment showcase and stuff like that, and possibly putting even more stadiums kind of and more schools into danger. My other kind of worry is some of the length and things like that. I know that this halftime was just a little bit longer than it normally is. I'm not blaming Georgia's collapse on that. They obviously Alabama, you know, had they were going to win. Pretty much everybody knew about 5 minutes into the second half Alabama had come back out to play to win. And obviously Nick Saban's one of the best, if not the best, head coach in college football of all time. So it's kind of hard to keep him down when he's been in the last three national title games. That's my main concern, not the quality of the performance, not the performer, like I've seen some people and stuff like that. But then again, my only other question is, I know it's only the national title game, not the Super Bowl, but I do know, you know, commercials are at a premium. Is that a technical loss of revenue for the station? Because instead of showing more commercials, they showed a halftime show and everything. So these are just some questions that I haven't had time to look into, but I think kind of piqued my interest and stuff. But then once again about the game, yeah, Georgia, total just kind of let down. I mean, yeah, very disappointing second half for that school. So
I get where you're coming from, and I understand the critique of the show and the length of and everything else, but I felt like none of that really matters when you're making two college teams who the players are unpaid play an extra game for the benefit of revenue for professional adults who are in their offices just watching and gamblers. So if it is a little longer, sure. On the commercials, you're absolutely right. They might have lost money, but at the same time, normally I would leave a station with the college halftime show if it's just the bands on the field. And I'm not going to watch it anyways till it comes back. Because it was a Kendrick Lamar show, I left it on to watch the Kendrick Lamar, and that meant naturally right after I saw the Black Panther second trailer, and then whatever commercials followed that, which I would have missed before. So at least for part of the population, I feel like you were able to grab them in. And in terms of just if it's messing with the structure and the speed, it sure probably is. But when coaches are getting paid $5 million, I really don't care about their comfort.
Well, and I'm more referring to the kids and stuff, mainly just because, I mean, you already kind of can tell that there's some, maybe not issues, but, man, after the halftime of the Super Bowl, teams, you know, that they're kind of used to 16, 17, 18 games of, like, a 30-minute half, and then the Super Bowl's 45 minutes and everything. And I'm, you know, it's obvious it's a longer televised halftime show, so you kind of take that into account when you're watching it. And for us, it doesn't matter because we're just watching it. And I'm not concerned about the coaches, but the players themselves, I mean, that's like a whole quarter that they're just not doing anything. You know, they're just kind of in the locker room. So, I mean, maybe it doesn't affect it at all. And I'm sure the Georgia players, none of them at all would blame it on that, for instance. But it's just something, maybe I'm just not ready for it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I could get both criticisms of it. For the most part, the only reason I watch it is because I know people from Alabama. If they lost, I would have trolled them. And because it was a Georgia team losing again, that I definitely found some amusement in that. But really, it's a social event to me. I don't care who wins. The same as the Super Bowl. Unless the Panthers are in it, I don't care who wins. I just want to see him win, and even now, I still don't care if the Panthers win or make it. Well, this year, they're definitely not going to make it, so. But even next year, it's a social event first and foremost for me.
Yeah, I definitely I can agree with you there and stuff. I think that one of the draws to games like this is just to get together and stuff like that, and so probably just looking at it too in-depth, for instance. I do know one of the, and it was more interesting just because I was at a bar watching this over at Buffalo Wild Wings, and everything after Kendrick Lamar played. You can guess the type of people who are frequenting a Buffalo Wild Wings on a Monday. Several people were turned off by him rapping and then seeing Black Panther. I wasn't turned off by the rapping, and of course, you know, I'm a huge Marvel fan, so I was like way into the trailer and stuff too, or the TV trailer too. So I was like, that's pretty cool. So.
Okay. And I did want to bring up one more point. You made the critique that having that college sports is really about the band, and that's definitely true. But I don't think we could discount the outside stage out of every college football town that has a live band playing there. Like, you go to Tech and the tailgating, there's always that stage there with the band that's performing. They're not inside, but that's for the entertainment of the people who aren't going in. They're just watching it in their tailgating solution. And I think this is the same thing. It was just a different atmosphere. And if it was Brooks and Dunn, and I'm sorry, my country references I know are outdated in this sense, but whoever that person is, let's say Garth Brooks, I don't think he's retired. George Strait, if he came back out of retirement and went on tour and performed the halftime show outside, I think it would have the same benefit. They'd get good ratings, and the people inside get the traditional event. And in case it goes over and he needs to perform like a whole hour, he can because it's outside and they could just cut it out and go back into the game.
Yeah, that's true.
So I really like the concept. And so what has been your entertainment this week, Cassie? And I hope you could talk a little, because I'm going to go get some tequila and 7-Up.
So, yeah, so I went on a cruise.
Woo!
Yeah, with my mother-in-law. And it was actually through the church. It was women's retreat. And their I guess, saying was restore, renew, revive. And so, anyway, so I met a lot of women from all different career paths and age. And so, but yeah, there was like 300 of us. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. So we all met at the church, and then we boarded the bus and went to Galveston. We were on Royal Caribbean Vision of the Sea. And so we all boarded, and you know, this is the first time I've ever been on a cruise. So I wasn't really, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. They had a very intense schedule as far as keeping everybody on board entertained. There was always something going on, whether it was like a dance lesson or an auction or a concert going on. And it's funny because it's like being on this cruise, you would think that, you know, I kind of correlated that you'll probably be able to hear the next person beside you in, you know, in a hotel room. The hotel walls are pretty thin, so, but on the ship, I mean, I didn't hear any of the people around me, and so the sound was pretty good, and with the multiple concerts or music that they were playing, like, once you go through one room or one area, all of a sudden, you hear the music or the sound or whatever it's going on there, but this ship was pretty big. It had a good 9 floors, and then like it went up to 11, but 11 was like, I guess, kind of like a small little club area, which I think on the last day is what I discovered. I didn't even see it until the last day. And then on the 10th floor, sort of, was basically kind of like a track around the boat. So there was like a little walking track around it. And then up there was a rock climbing wall, which I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. And I never went and did it. But I did get up just to see the sunrise and got some really good pictures. But yeah, we landed in Cozumel, was it on Wednesday? And we went ahead and did an excursion. It was called Experience Cozumel Through the Mayan Senses. And so basically it was a bus tour around the island. We got to go to a concert, and I mean, they went through the ages of dances that they've experienced there in Cozumel, and everything from the Mayans all the way to, you know, the Spanish influence and Mexican influence there. And then after that, we went and had a tequila tasting, and that went pretty good. We went ahead and got some tequila and brought that back, which is funny because it's like, oh yeah, this is duty free. It's like, oh, okay. But apparently once we got back, we still had to pay taxes on it. Because it's Texas. It's like, your mom was like, that's not right. So, and then, our tour didn't start until like 11:30. So we went ahead and got off board around 8 and looked around and went shopping a little bit. And then went to the excursion. We saw the beach for a little bit, and but yeah, I mean, overall, I would do it again. I would definitely go on a tour and do an excursion and I would most definitely go on a cruise and do that. Now, the only downfall is Chris is pretty tall, and those beds are like being back in the dorms again, and the shower was extremely small, but that's probably my only complaint. So, but we had great service, whether it was the guy that cleaned our room, to the people that were assigned to our specific table every evening for dinner. But yeah, it was an experience.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, there she is.
What?
I've been listening, but y'all been talking about things like the video games, the movies. Like, I'll just let you talk for a minute.
Wow, I see.
And so,
well, I mean, what's my contribution going to be? Tomb Raider? That was like 20 years ago, probably.
How about that time you got that guy addicted to drugs?
What? Well, I can say nothing about that.
Hey, that happened in Vegas. No, one question I wanted to ask on the cruise. Would you recommend that cruise line and ship for somebody else who wanted to experience it?
So, hearing the others that were on the cruise with me, they said overall it was good, but apparently things have changed. It's my first cruise, so I wasn't... There was really no, I didn't have anything to compare it with. But apparently they were stingy on the food. Apparently you're supposed to go down and get food 24 hours, which, they had food, but it was more like sandwiches and, like, if you wanted, like, cheese and meats and stuff. So it wasn't really... out there, and then everybody was kind of disappointed on the ice cream because they had it all wrapped up. And the ice cream was pretty good. It reminded me of the ice cream at Gringo's. And I was like, ooh, this is good.
That's like soft serve.
Yeah, so it was right there by the pool. So I made sure I grabbed some and then went to the pool. But I went to the pool like one time and they had a belly flop competition. It was so funny. They had to like dance real quick and then jump in the air and somehow make a splash. So some of them didn't do so good, and there was a pretty big guy there. It was a football player. So that was another thing. There was a lot of college kids on this cruise, and I'm like thinking, aren't they supposed to be in school? And
no, I don't think they start till this week.
Yeah, so I didn't know that until they were telling me.
Or Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, they were telling me. It was like, oh no, it doesn't start. I was like, oh, okay. So there was quite a good chunk of basically kids.
Or the truth is, this is syllabus day. It don't matter.
Yeah, that's true too. So, but they had a lot of games. They even had an adult scavenger hunt, which was pretty funny. Saw that. They had it was just like an egg drop competition. So you're supposed to find things on board that you can like safely land an egg from. I think it was like the third floor. I was like, third floor is pretty high. Okay. So, yeah.
I will.
Did you win?
Oh, I didn't participate. I just saw it, and I was just like, this guy had made this contraption. I was like, how did he do that? I was like, where did he get this stuff? But he made like this kind of like propeller thing, and it slowly went down, and I was like, that's insane. I was like, you must be an engineer.
That's funny.
Because he used rubber bands, and he found some paper clips and then I guess paper, I want to say, but I didn't really look at it. Everybody was just cheering. And then at the end, the very last day, which was pretty interesting, they basically gathered a lot of the crew to the center of the ship. It was called the Centrum. And basically announced, you know, how many people were on board and how many were from different countries. And so overall, like, the people that represented the crew was from 58 different countries. And so majority of them, or the most was the Philippines, so the Filipino, and then Indians, and then from India, Indonesia, and China. And those
Were there any shithole countries represented?
One. So I was like, yeah, we didn't hear that until we got back, and it was just like, really? Really? So, but.
I guess technically I'd be one of the people from the shithole country.
Yeah, so, and that's what your mom was like.
Sorry, Chris.
It's like, I guess I'm a shithole. Like, she was so mad. And then, but it wasn't just Haiti,
it was like Norway, it was some weird
No. Norway, he'll take the immigrants. It was Haiti and Africa. Just like anybody who sucks at geography, they never refer to a country in Africa, they refer to the continent as a country.
The continent.
Yeah.
And so it's similar, it's similar to like listening to Nas music or watching Belly, where he's like, we're gonna get out of here. We're gonna go to Africa. And you're like, where in Africa? Where? Like, tell me where you're going. Or what's the song? If I ruled the world, it's like, I'll open every cell in Attica and send them to Africa. Where, motherfucker? Like, Africa's a big continent.
It is.
Like, it's like the biggest. Like, if you look at it, like, the actual size, geography wise.
Yeah.
But it's the biggest. It's like a huge continent. Where? So it's always. Sorry, just a pet peeve, as clearly you can hear in my voice right now, of the Africa. Okay, where?
Yeah. And your mom did such a good job, because your mom always watches the news, and she told me, she's like, I'm not going to watch. I need to relax. You know, and she kept saying the you know, the restore, renew, revive.
She shouldn't be watching the news
and
ever.
She didn't watch the news, so she did very well. It wasn't until we docked back or to the port and got here that she turned on and she saw the feed, and she's like, oh. And then that's when she just kind of blew up. I was like, I was going to wait to look at everything until I got home. I don't want to do it now. But then she started talking to me on the bus about it. And I was like, okay, breathe. Let's just breathe. I was like, it's different if he was standing right here. Just breathe.
True.
So.
Wow. And so what has been the entertainment for Cool Cat this week?
Well, this is a good segue. I've actually been listening. I got turned on to audiobooks this year. And I've been listening to Trevor Noah's Born a Crime. And it's so entertaining. Are you guys familiar with Trevor Noah? Are you fans?
Yes, I'm familiar. I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but definitely familiar.
Well, he's from Africa somewhere. Somewhere in Africa.
Yes, he's African. South Africa.
My boyfriend's from Egypt, so I can say where in Africa. So there's that.
I will say calling Trevor Noah an African might be the most accurate, since he's South African. But I'm sorry for taking you off of your point.
No, I've just really been entertained. He's coming to Austin in February. And so I recently... I got tickets because the guy that I'm dating, who's my boyfriend, I can't really buy him things. He can afford to buy all the things. But he really loves Trevor Noah. But they're both from Africa. It's a big continent, different places. But
it just occurred to me,
like,
who you were talking
about. His favorite
person,
right?
Absolutely.
So I got tickets, and I'm like, I just want to know more, because I don't stay up that late. Not that I like or dislike, I found him entertaining, but This book is so fascinating. It's very interesting. I love human interest. It's like my very favorite thing. And so listening to his struggles and Born a Crime, because he's biracial, like back then it was before apartheid, and so I'm not fully through it, but very entertaining listen. And he narrates it himself, so I highly recommend it, even though I'm not all the way through. If you like human interest, I think it's really interesting.
And where do you get your audiobooks from? Are you buying them individually, or do you have a subscription to Audible or Amazon?
Yeah. I have a subscription to Audible.
And have you been happy with the process?
I have. I listened to a couple of books were gifted to me. He's a little bit younger than I am. And he's driving all the time. And one time I was sick. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I was like, I need a new book to read. And he just sent me a book because it would be the fastest way. And then I kind of fell in love with it. I've never thought about listening to a book because I don't drive that much anymore. But it's really great because, like, I'm going to bed, I listen. Or I'm getting ready for work, I listen. And I love it.
All right.
I like it more than I thought I would.
I guess we finally hit that mid-age stage where, like, we're listening to audiobooks.
That's what's going on in my life. But, hey, I'm not listening to self-help right now at this moment. I do listen to a lot of, not like self-help, but I listen to a lot of motivational, maybe.
Okay.
That's what I probably listen to the most of. But yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying the Trevor Noah Born a Crime book.
I definitely get the self-help and, like, the realization once. I've been listening a lot to Farnham Street blog, and they have a real, they always list a lot of good books. But I probably buy one audiobook a year, even though, sadly, I'll admit it's sports-related every time, and I just listen to it as a podcast just in my car when I'm going from account to account. But yeah, I love audiobooks. It's just normally the price is just a barrier that I already have 30 subscriptions for visual media. I'm trying not to add another subscription.
Hey, I totally get it, but I think it's like $15 a month, and I don't have a lot of things. And I get gifted a lot of books, and then I get one free credit every time. And it's just...
Oh, so you're not using the streaming service. This is, you're buying the audiobooks and then downloading them?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I have a subscription, so I pay $15 a month. That gives me one free credit. Like, that's a part of, I guess, the membership. But I get gifted a lot. So, just like, okay.
So he's like, this is a good book I read. Here you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's awesome.
So I get a lot more free stuff than probably a normal person, but it's like $15, I get one book a month. That's more than I was spending on books, and because I enjoy listening so much, I have more time for listening. Because like I said, I'm getting ready for work, or I'm doing laundry, like I could just be moving around and doing dishes, or putting on my makeup, or taking a shower, and I'm getting fed information, so I really like it.
Well, books are always one of those things where it's not quite an expense, it's more of an investment. So even when you spend money on it, like, you read a book, you put it in your bookcase, you'll come back, you'll read it again, but you're never sure when you're going to get something out of it. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't consider it really an expense. It's just I'm investing in having more information around me that's not internet-based.
Absolutely.
So, well, as this is free drinks next week, what are you drinking, or what have you drank interesting lately, Cool Cat?
I am drinking, I opened up an old bottle, older anyway. I'm drinking Grape Creek. I'm at home, and I work at Grape Creek. We all know this, so I have a lot of Grape Creek wines. but I picked an older vintage. I had five vintages of Cabernet Syrah, and I opened a 2012. That's fantastic. One of my favorite ones. Nice fruit, lots of pepper, very smooth. I probably should be eating a steak, but I'm not.
Okay. And was this a one-off purchase, or do you have a couple of bottles of this one?
No, it was one of my favorites of all time at Great Creek. My favorite was the 2013 Petite Syrah. And so I don't hold on to wines very much. I drink them. But I had a linear collection of the Cab Syrah, and today I just thought it's a nice day to open that. Okay. So it's just, when it's gone, it's gone. I had some other good wines. A couple of weeks ago, actually, I went on a little girls' excursion to Fredericksburg. And I apologize for last weekend. One of my wine club members picked up my phone by accident and took it home thinking it was theirs. But the week before that, I went to Fredericksburg with the girls and stopped at a winery I'd heard a lot about. And their wines are actually not from Texas. They're from Italy. And the name of the winery is Andreucci. And there were several wines I really loved, and I actually joined that wine club. It's been a long time since I've joined a wine club, but I love them, and they're actually imported from Italy, so that's a little bit different than what I normally do, which is a lot of Texas wines. Love Texas wines, but I love Italian wines too, and with my recent trip to Italy, it just kind of feels good to have some Italian wines in my collection.
And do they import just the juice, or are they imported already bottled?
No, bottled. The owner is from Italy. One of the wine club benefits is a yearly excursion as wine club members to Italy. So that was actually a drawing factor for me. I've been thinking about where I want to go. There's so much world to see. But there's a big part of me that just honestly wants to go back to Italy. I had such a great time. I didn't want to leave. There's a lot of Italy I didn't see. And so I'm like, I just want to have this.
Okay.
Less expensive. And different than just, it's not the normal stuff that you can go to your wine shop and get. It's a particular owner.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I am drinking Josh Cabernet Sauvignon from Josh Cellars. See, vintage 2015. I like the back of it because I was like, I guess I don't, or well, the front of it that y'all say. It says, my father's name was Joseph, but his friends just called him Josh. I thought it was funny. So that's what I'm drinking. I just opened it up. But as far as other drinks, just that tequila I tried in Cozumel, we went to, I guess, like a vineyard or tour in Cozumel called, well, Hacienda?
A hacienda is like, it just means home.
Yeah.
But it's a tequila house.
Yeah, and so that was pretty good. She kind of showed us how to drink tequila. And
with boxing gloves and condoms.
But I ended up getting
wow.
I ended up getting Chris a bottle, and it's been aged 12 years, but like if you think about how long it takes the agave to grow to, I guess, the right stage in life, I guess. It's 10 years. So overall, it's like 22 years. I was like, that's long. Let me get that. And it was really, really smooth. She basically said to, and apparently this is not supposed to cause you like hangovers, that you'll actually remember what you did last night. so I guess you just put it in your mouth and you slowly drink it and, you know, feel it go into your stomach. And then once you drink it, you're supposed to kind of inhale in the aromas in your glass. And then you're supposed to like slowly, you know, exhale all of that. And they were very generous. So I had some. So by the time we got to the bus, we were feeling pretty good.
So what you're telling me is no hangover.
No.
And no blackout?
No.
That's you're like, you'll remember what you did last night.
Yeah, you'll remember what you did, and so that you feel, you're going to feel good. So
no excuses.
But yeah, so I got Chris a bottle, and then his mom also got a bottle, but she got the 7 year, which is 17 years, one. So then I think it would be cool because then they can kind of compare the two. And she's like, we're going to have a little tequila party. I just started laughing. So, but she enjoyed it too. She's ooh, this is good.
You guys both have great parents. Yeah. But it's very funny to me because Chris's mom is a little more conservative than I would expect.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But then she has this whole other side. Oh, we can have a little tequila party.
Yeah.
I like it.
And she's like, and Chris is like, wait, you're inviting everybody? She goes, no, just us.
It's more of a tequila get together.
Yeah, tequila get together.
It's family tequila time.
Of course.
So, yeah, that was my tasting experience. So I didn't go all crazy like some people say. So, but it was a very good experience. I'd do it again. And I'll remember.
So are you drinking anything tonight, Mike?
Nothing, just Michelob Ultra, pretty much. Taking a week off of, well, after Texas Tech's loss on Tuesday and the national title game Monday, you know, just taking a week off of anything interesting to drink, let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, tonight I'm not drinking anything special. It's Eagle Rare, their 10-year-old whiskey. It's probably my favorite bourbon that exists. I've tried a bunch of other bourbons, but I always return to Eagle Rare. It's probably for the quality that you get out of it and the cost, it's probably the best value whiskey you could buy, but it does average about $28 a bottle, but extremely good. And the difference between the 10 and 15 is probably about $70.
Man.
And the 15's not that far off in taste profile, but Eagle Rare, I'm drinking it straight with the 7-Up Chaser. 7-Up's just sitting there. Alright. And so, are we ready to get into some stories?
Yeah, definitely.
Alright. Well, with the New Year's resolution right upon us, we do have some changes in the industry. This one doesn't affect alcohol so much, but it might, as especially bars in one of our favorite cities are still not smoke-free. Philip Morris says its New Year's resolution is to give up cigarettes. Philip Morris International has made a dramatic New Year's resolution. They are trying to give up cigarettes. The maker of such brands as Marlboro, L&M, Parliament, Chesterfield took out a full-page ad in several newspapers in the UK that says its ambition in 2018 is to build a smoke-free future and eventually stop selling cigarettes. The manifesto, as it's described on the company website, is to help people quit smoking traditional cigarettes and one day replace them all with smoke-free alternatives like e-cigarettes and heated tobacco products. The company claims the alternatives are less harmful and that we can achieve a significant public health benefit only when a large number of these smokers switch from cigarettes to better products. Do you think this is coming from a sincere place? Do you think this is a marketing ploy? Or are these just words and it will continue as it always has been?
I mean, it's a small percentage of their business now, isn't it? Compared to, like, Kraft macaroni and cheese. Maybe not that by itself, but, I mean, I don't think it's, you know, smoking is declining. I've heard that from a lot of different sources and stuff. But it just seems to me that, like, the dangers outweigh any significant benefits from a company perspective of selling it and stuff. So,
yeah, I think everybody's, because everybody's going through to doing the, what is it, the
kind of the vaporizer,
the
things.
Vapors,
or those because electronic a lot of, cigarettes.
Yeah, because a lot of cities now, I mean, restaurants is like, oh, this is smoke free or whatever. Now I don't know, you know, longevity wise, I mean, is that better? I don't know. Still smoke going down your lungs. They've always compared cigarettes, but I don't think of it. Well, I haven't even tried to see if there's any study on just, you know, those e-smoke cigarettes or whatever.
I think it hasn't been around long enough.
Yeah.
I'll point out two things. One from my closer experience and one from a wider one. It was advertised in the UK, not in the United States.
True.
I'm just saying. And Philip Morris, that's a U.S. company. They're not saying that here. But in Georgetown a couple of years ago, they passed a city ordinance because there was not studies about it. So in Georgetown, you can't even vape inside of a building.
Oh, wow.
And I understand that aspect of the vaping, because as both of you intimated, it's kind of unsure what the long-term effects of vaping are to the public as well as the users. And if the users want to use it, that's great, but maybe we should wait or delay the use in public.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm interested to see where Philip Morris is going to go for business. Maybe they have the UK market cornered, and maybe they have this plan for Asia as that's their big market. I know RJ Reynolds could get out of it overnight, as Mike indicated. They own Kraft. They own, they own Kraft. They own Chateau St. Michel. They own a bunch of other brands under the Altria brand. Philip Morris was previously owned by Nabisco, but they were sold off about 10 years ago. And maybe that's also where some of the money is lost, because it used to be one of the most profitable industries, and now that's gone down dramatically. I feel like there's something else at play with an investment. And I say that only because, if you remember, 5 years ago, CVS gave up cigarettes in all of their stores. And like every single store. Yeah. CVS took about a $3 billion loss as a result of giving up those cigarettes. But because of that, this year they were able to announce that they signed an agreement with Aetna to run that health aspect of the operation, the processing.
Yeah.
So everything's going through them now. So they easily made the $3 billion back. It's either, I feel like that's either occurring with Philip Morris, or it's something more sinister, like we own all the fentanyl that's out on the street and people are overdosing. And like they're just sitting there with like Dr. Claw petting their cat. We'll get you next time, Mr. Gadget. But you're absolutely right when Chrissy indicates it's the UK. This doesn't matter for the US. Nothing's going to change. So, the next story, this one is going to be about beer. We'll go to beer. In 2013, a beer law was changed. In Texas, being biannual legislative years, you don't get them every year. So the law passes, it goes into place on the odd number of year, usually. The Texas Supreme Court is brewers' last chance to get rid of the 2013 beer law. Texas craft brewers are facing a new blow from the courts. Capping off a disappointing legislative year, but they plan to fight back. A reversal of a judge's decision that gave a monetary compensation for distribution rights was announced Friday, leading a group of brewers involved in the initial case to declare their intent to appeal the decision to the Supreme Court. Last year, Austin-based Live Oak Brewing in Dallas-Fort Worth area, Pentacolis Brewing and Revolver Brewing successfully sued the state to regain valuable capital they said they could get from selling their distribution rights, which they were able to do prior to 2013. The law was part of a landmark bundle of legislation that otherwise was a boon for brewers in the state, but Senate Bill 639 required them to give their distribution rights to distributors rather than sell them, and the brewers sued. Last August, State Judge Karen Crump declared the law to be unconstitutional. Her decision was consequently reversed Friday by the Texas Third Court of Appeals. Brewers only have one step left to hope the Texas Supreme Court will disagree with the appellate court. It's well established that the Texas Constitution protects economic liberties, and these rights do not cease to exist when the government begins licensing and regulating individuals and business. Institute for Justice managing attorney Arif Panju, whose firm represented the brewers in court, said in a news release, Texas prohibition on selling distribution rights was written by distributors for distributors at the expense of brewers. That sort of naked wealth transfer is unconstitutional. Do you think that the Supreme Court has enough information or background knowledge to really make this change, to actually compensate brewers, venters, and distillers for their distribution rights? Because as of now, the current way that it's set up, the only way you can get it into the store are to a restaurant if you produce more than a certain level of quantity, is to give the rights to the distributor. They don't compensate you for the rights. They just help you distribute it, and they give you back the money for what you sold. What these brewers were asking was, we have value in our brand because people are asking for it, and if you want our brand, then you should compete for the rights, whether you're Glazers, Republic, whoever, that if you're going to pay us $10 a pallet and they're going to pay us $9, we're going to go with $10 because it's a free market and we should have that right. And the appellate court says, no, you shouldn't get compensated. You should just have to give up the rights because that's how the law is written.
I think it brings up an interesting topic because of a couple things. I mean, first off, one of my main arguments all of the time is that it's unfair to legislate against beer, despite the separate percentages of alcohol, what have you. It's unfair to legislate against beer and then not include wine, for instance, or to make rules that apply to one industry, liquor, but not beer, not wine, for instance. I think it's interesting because, I think that if that's something where they are saying that your rights to sell your product, if you are limited by the laws, to you can't sell your product unless it's through a distributor, then you should have some right to, or retain, or basically what this is saying, right, is earn some money, selling that right, correct? That's what this is saying?
Absolutely.
So then my point would be then that's not fair to say, okay, well, that's how it is for beer, but wineries, yeah, you're still required to sell to a distributor. and everything before it goes into stores and stuff. Well, actually, no, you're not, because you can have a Class B wholesaler's license as a winery and direct sell to package stores. Okay, so this is evening the playing, or they need to change the law to even the playing field, in my mind. Does that make sense? For beer, for breweries. Okay. So, yeah, then I'm completely against the law, and I'm in favor of what the judge initially said. I'm guessing it's got to go to the Supreme Court. What chances does it have? I don't know. I'm not very well read on, you know, what kind of tort cases the Texas Supreme Court sees routinely and stuff, but or how they rule.
I think the other thing that you have to take into consideration is, and especially in Texas, because we still deal with a lot of blue laws, and wine and beer are definitely treated differently than liquor in lots of different aspects. And beer is coming around, and good for them and their lobbyists, but soon behind that, I would think, would be distilleries. And why shouldn't they also have the same rights?
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, that's what I'm saying, is that if the rules are going to be one way for one of those producers, I think it should be the same for all three, essentially. That way it's all an even playing field.
Yeah. I think the distribution lobbyists have already been around so long and have so much more money that I don't think it'll pass, because I think the lobbyists will win.
I mean, that kind of goes into county judges and or not even county judges, but Texas State Supreme Court judges. You know, how are they selected? Are they elected? Are they appointed? If they're appointed, then yeah, it kind of has a little bit, because I'm sure the governor is the one who appoints them. If they're elected, then they have a little bit more. There's a little bit more of, you know, kind of what do the people want and everything. So, I don't know. It's an interesting case, and I'll be sure to follow it. I think that's fascinating.
I don't think the people care enough. I think the people that do care really care, but I think there's so many other things going on that have much more importance. That when you're looking at big whole numbers in a larger demographic, alcohol isn't something that's a priority for most people. We're industry, we're ex-industry enthusiasts, so we're probably at a different level of interest. But I don't think, as a huge demographic, that's a priority for people. That's just my opinion.
Your face is at a different level of interest. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned, I think that is one of the big things, is the lobbyists are so entrenched, and being there's only a couple of distributors, those lobbyists, it's in their best interest that they don't have to compensate the brands. Because if you think, if they have to compensate, like if Benny Keith has to pay all the brewers for the rights to distribute, naturally, that means somebody else could come in the market and be like, you know what, we can give you the focus that your brand deserves, we'll pay for the rights, and we'll agree to only take on 5 brands. Versus now, these companies that have massive portfolios. Like, when I worked for Republic, the portfolio of just options that could be sold was in the hundreds, like 500s. Glazers is the same. This would segment the market more. It would create more jobs, but obviously the lobbyists don't want that, because their interests are protected when the power stays with the few. And so, well, yeah, that's interesting. But almost as interesting as an article by the Lad Bible, research finds people who like gin and tonic are more likely to be psychopaths. If you enjoy bitter flavors such as gin and tonic, then I'm sorry to tell you, you might be a psychopath. Psychologists from Innsbruck University in Austria believe that those of us that like bitter tastes of tonic water, black coffee, dark chocolate are more likely to show signs of sadism, narcissism, Machiavellism, so are more likely to derive pleasure from the pain of other people, be cold-hearted, selfish, lack empathy. Bloody hell, quite the list, isn't it? The researchers carried out two experiments on 953 people across two different studies. Men and women were shown a list of foods, including bitter, sour, salty, and sweet items. Then they were asked to rate each item on a 6-point scale. They were given personality questionnaires to measure their levels of emotional stability, Machiavellianism, aggression, and a tendency towards everyday sadism by asking a series of weird questions such as, I enjoy tormenting people. Lo and behold, when the researchers compared the two piles of data, they found those who enjoyed bitter foods and drinks also showed a tendency for all the bad stuff. Or as researchers put it, the results of both studies confirmed the hypothesis that bitter taste preferences are positively associated with malevolent personality traits, with the most robust relation to everyday sadism and psychopathy. So, do any of y'all like coffee?
No.
I don't
like
nope.
I'm not a coffee drinker.
Hey, I'm we're not psychopaths.
But I do like gin and tonic. I do like gin and tonics.
I don't.
I do not. But I do like dark chocolate.
Okay, so, well, Mike said he likes gin and tonic, so we have to ask him the question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy tormenting people?
Okay, I'm going to say this. The answer is no. Sorry, let me give you the short answer.
I was like,
Yeah, I was going to say, wow. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Here's the question. Mass Effect, did I punch the reporter? No. Did I ever choose renegade options, i.e. the quick and like, oh, it doesn't matter how many civilians die options? No. Even in video games, I'm a good guy. So I'm going to say that I would be the outlier there for sure.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. I honestly don't know that many gin drinkers, but I know tons of coffee drinkers, especially on Houston roads. And I'll agree, most Houston drivers are psychopaths. So this study must be true. But I'm still wondering, this means somebody got the funding to do this study, had to come up with the literature review, and find these already justified in research questionnaires that verify if somebody is more likely to be a Machiavellianism. And then they got it published and were able to almost publish it in non-academic speak and just be like, yeah, y'all are crazy as shit. I'm impressed. I did college wrong. I did grad school wrong. I should have been doing this. Bravo.
Yeah, I mean, psychology degrees should be at a premium, getting to study this kind of stuff.
Yeah, especially if you're getting to drink, like, premium stuff, because I feel like you have to at least try some of it if you're going to make that choice.
I just can't believe people actually answer, like, on a questionnaire, like, I like to torment things. I mean, that's the weird part to me, that somebody would be honest about it.
I agree, because, like, how are we defining torment? Because isn't that like a lead indicator of somebody being like a serial killer?
Right, I think torturing small animals.
Oh,
for
small
sure.
Animals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Small animals.
Either way, it's a weird situation. This whole study was weird. But
also, what about the other aspect where maybe people are just like answering ridiculously to throw the study?
That's true.
Because they thought it was funny. Maybe it was their own way of tormenting anyway. I don't know.
Ah, you're right. Like, if they were just doing it to screw up the results, but by screwing it up, they were proving the results correct. Wow.
Like, I'm just saying, that's I know deep. The four of us, if somebody gave us a survey, wouldn't we just see the question like that and be like, this is funny. I'm going to answer this way.
Yeah, it depends on the environment. If it was for like a job interview, it'd be like, okay, I got to take this serious. Don't want them to think I'm a psychopath. But if somebody came up to me in a bar,
it's a random survey.
Yeah, can you finish the survey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I don't have to put my name on it, right? All right, I got you. Let me go ahead and do this.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that I just found that as a super weird one, but it was still pretty good. All right. And so, well, as it is about 10 degrees outside, or at least that's how it feels in my head, because, God, it's freezing. I left Lubbock to be colder in Houston than it is in Lubbock.
It's weird.
And something
that's
is
weird.
Super wrong with that. But
guys, there's going to be snow flurries again on Tuesday. I'm like, seriously? I don't feel like I could go outside if it's snowing anymore. I didn't do well in it.
I think you're going to have to get a whole shirt that says, I survived the winter of 2018. Brr.
The blizzard of 2017, I barely survived, let's just be honest.
Hey, the blizzard of 2017, I coincidentally was working from home that day, so it was okay. I didn't have to get on the road and deal with any crazy people. But with this weather change, and also with, I think it is close to Cedar Fever, as I was seeing from another person's post whose name rhymes with Datelin. Whiskey for cold plus three other drinks to try. Winter is upon us, and so too is the season of coughing, sneezing, snuffling? Okay. And wheezing. No matter how healthy you are, there are a very good chance you'll be coming down with a cold sometime over the next 3 to 4 months. But rather than reaching for that dusty pack of cold Rex hiding in the bottom of your medicine cabinet, why not reach for the booze cabinet instead? Here are 4 alcoholic drinks that just might give that stubborn seasoned sickness a boost. Alcohol is medicine? Well, I never. As with most things, nature can provide a cue. As civilization began, it spread across the world with the advent of agricultural revolution some 30,000 years ago. Stockpiles of grain, fruit, and honey began to accumulate. In those rare instances when our early civilized ancestors didn't eat or drink all their food stockpiles, those that contained natural sugars began to ferment and turn to alcohol. An unsuspecting slurp from the old vat of honey or slurp from the aged apricot juice told our forebears that something was very exciting afoot. But these fairly weak alcoholic concoctions by the 16th century, however, a new breed of spirits were being produced that now had a slightly more serious use, medicine. A trip down to the doctor's office would invariably end with a healthy tipple of whatever the spirit they had on hand as a cure-all and general health-bringing tonic. So, if there's anything more annoying than a nasty, racking cough when you're trying to sleep at night, you're finally trying to fall back asleep to the rest to slumber and you start to feel a tickle, well, rather than reaching for cough syrup, which is positively loaded with chemicals, you should reach for your whiskey bottle. Far from implying that you have alcoholic tendencies, put together a bourbon cough syrup will verify your good judgment that have you niggling? Cough banished in no time. In a jar, throw in a shot of whiskey, a splash of warm water, and a dash of raw honey. Put the lid on, give it a good shake, slowly sip back your anti-cough cocktail. Resist the temptation to shoot the whole thing back in one delicious gulp, as this will reduce its effectiveness. Kind of sounds like a hot toddy, but
yeah.
Cool. Vodka can be used for a sore throat. That it does, when done right, vodka is one of the purest forms of alcohol. It might burn going down, but that burn smells big trouble for harmful bacteria hiding in the back of your mouth and cavities of your throat. Using vodka for a sore throat is simple. Pour a little high-quality vodka in a shot glass, gargle for 20 minutes or as long as you can stand, then swallow the potent brew. Repeat a few times a day.
Excuse me, 20 minutes?
Oh, I have to interrupt seconds. You. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm not gargling anything for 20 minutes. That's too much.
Touche. Repeat a few times a day, preferably not immediately before performing work. Yeah, no, not 20 minutes, definitely 20 seconds.
I was like, what kind of crazy stuff are you reading?
The other
recommend- terrible idea.
Yeah, this is a terrible idea. I understand. But if you get tonsillitis, cognac could be used. In a pan, mix together 2 tablespoons of ground cumin with 2 cups of water, bring it to boil, stirring regularly, lower the heat and allow it to simmer until the mixture has reduced into a thick slurry. Strain the liquid and once it cools, add a tablespoon of cognac, stir it thoroughly mixed in, take a teaspoon of your cognac throat remedy once an hour until the pain recedes. See, I'm not sure if they're just, trying
to get... Cumin is really good.
Is it? I'm not sure if I could really identify the taste or flavor of cumin.
Well,
it's actually one of the main ingredients in chili.
Oh, okay.
Cumin, and lots of great health benefits. In fact, when I was in Jamaica, I at the resort I was at, there was Rastafarian, and it was like a little seminar, and there were really like 3 people in him, and he was like 80 something, and he was talking about all the natural stuff. He wasn't talking about weed. I'll just preface that. He was talking about just kind of organic health and using the earth. And cumin was one of his big things that he talked a lot about.
Okay. So I might have to try this one. I'm just not sure if I have tonsillitis, if I'm going to be standing over the stove to create a reduction sauce.
Well, that's what you have Kathy for.
Yeah. That's love and marriage. And sickness and health.
Oh, shut up.
See, this is the response I get. Y'all heard that.
No,
the whole audience heard it.
So when I get sick, I'm like, okay. But when he gets sick, it's just like the whole world's coming to an end.
Kathy, it's called the man flu.
I know. I know.
It doesn't matter what it is. It's the man.
Wrapping stuff like a burrito. I'm like, dude, come on.
Sorry, guys.
Speaking of this weather in Lubbock, like they actually have told people, like public health warning, do not go outside if you are sick. You know, all the typical stuff that you kind of.
Yeah, you hear.
All the time anyways.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things that like this time they actually like Lubbock hospitals. And ERs have run out of, in the past couple days, like run out of hospital beds and everything. It's gotten that bad, this flu that's going around here, up here. So,
oh my God, do you think I should get the flu shot?
No.
It's going around here too, and I'm like,
well, the CDC is actually recommending everybody get it this year. But then again, that could just be like a whole government control thing. You never know.
But they also said it's less than 10% effective this year because the flu has mutated so quickly this year from what they originally thought it was going to be. That they say that not only is it a mutated strain, it's mutated from the original mutations, which is perplexing doctors that they've never seen it move this fast. And Texas is one of the states that has a severe, like, almost epidemic level flu issues.
My, I guess my former boss, he's been sick this whole time that I've been on vacation. And so I saw the emails, like, oh man, he got sick. And then, like, the next day, my kids are sick. The next day, now 2 kids are sick. And then the next day, I'm like, you only got 3 kids. Whole family sick. Because I was just like, man, I don't think you're getting a break.
Did you tell them about the cognac?
I should.
Or the vodka mixed with the whiskey and cognac? And that could solve tonsillitis, sore throat, and the cough.
He's a lightweight. He's like,
I know. It'll either knock him out or it'll solve it. One way or another. Yeah, he wins.
That's true.
But
enjoy your sleep.
Yeah, if it's a cold or flu, apparently Jägermeister is infused with the range of medicinal herbs. Once again, not marijuana. That makes a great drink for stimulating digestion, but also speeding recovery from mild cold or flu. Simply take a shot of Jaeger, preferably warmed a few times a day to help clear congested airway. That sounds disgusting. A warm shot of Jaeger?
No. I would never.
Just tell me to drink motor oil.
Never.
I don't even want to take a cold shot of Jaeger.
Yeah, like my early 20s says no, that was a bad idea.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm kind of done with that. Kind of done with Jaeger.
Yeah, like
I'm all about the hot toddy though. The hot toddy I'm in for. I know that wasn't one of the things listed, but I like tea.
Well, technically it was listed. They just said drink it at room temperature, the whiskey for the cough, because it had all the ingredients of the hot toddy. It just wasn't warmed up.
I feel like they left out the tea part, though.
Okay, you're right. They did leave out the tea. But I'm just starting to really get into tea as I've been losing weight. So I'm drinking, like, unsweetened tea, and now I'm trying to look for better-tasting leaves and everything. So I'm still getting
into
that.
Well, you got a good guide.
Yeah, and I still think tea is horribly boring. But it switches it up from water if you're drinking water all day.
Did you try any of the tea I have?
No, because you told me to put it in that strainer thing that didn't strain it. Just threw a bunch of tea leaves in the drink.
You didn't do it.
Oh, my
right.
God. She has the most amazing tea ever.
It's a coffee press. It is not a tea press.
Oh, my God.
Use it right.
Okay, go and show me.
I'll show you.
Okay, can you show me? And then while you're at it, make me some tonsillitis cognac. Once again, no. She doesn't care.
I do. I love you very much.
I love you just enough not to make you any. All right. And so I did have a question, and this was really not related to a story. And it was brought up by another story I saw earlier. Is there any, I guess, rare or alcoholic beverage or any type of beverage that you've anticipated so much that you would get to put a premium on just tasting it? For example, Good Part of America puts a premium on tasting the Pappy Van Winkle whiskey, the $50 a shot. Is there any wine, liquor, beer that you would pay above market value to try?
Above market value for that particular thing?
Yes, for
or
that.
Or above market value compared to other ones, not that brand?
For that particular thing and market-wise, that if it's a wine that it's so much more expensive than what the average person is willing to pay even for a fine wine. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds like there's something on your mind.
Yeah, because I have done it.
All right, so what's the one that you've done and what's the one that you're anticipating?
Okay. Not what I'm anticipating, but one that I've done and one that I'd like to preface with. I was in Kentucky and I didn't drink Pappy, even though everybody was talking about it. I was just like, I don't really like bourbon enough to do that. I'm good. Cake bread at the Funky Door in Lubbock. They have wines that you can taste like a taste. What is it, Mike? Is it 2 ounces?
It was an ounce, 3 ounces, okay. And then 6, I think. So.
Yeah. So the fact, and I bought a glass. I bought a glass of wine for like $35. Because I love cake bread, but I can't just afford to buy that bottle all the time. But they had it by the glass. I bought a glass. Because $35 for that glass of wine to me was worth it.
I think it was like 10 bucks an ounce or something like that. So it wasn't too...
Yeah, normal people wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But I don't think normal, everyday people would spend that much on a glass. Because usually the value is better by the bottle. But my thinking was, well, I can't afford to spend the amount that the bottle is, but I can afford to spend $35. So yeah, I did that before. I'm a huge cake bread fan though. It's the wine that made me fall in love with wine, soft place in my heart, and it's so delicious. It's the one that clicked with me that made me think, oh, I get why people spend this much money on wine. And it was really the start of my wine career. In hindsight, I didn't know it at the time, but really that's, yeah, so I was like, yes, I'll spend $35 on a glass of cake bread Cabernet.
That's awesome. All right, Mike?
I mean, I was actually going to say Funky Door and getting cake bread and stuff like that, but I'll go the different route. I'll be like something that I don't know in everything. One of the five French first growths, like for a glass of wine or an ounce of wine, like I would pay a premium for just a small amount, everything, you know, up to like, you know, 50 bucks a glass or, you know, something crazy like that, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I totally, that's a good one.
And outside of the cake bread experience, was there an experience that you could reference where you felt other people explaining it to other people, they would have thought you overpaid for the product?
I feel like the people that I know that I talk to wine about, I'm in the wine industry, understand my logic there. But I think if I talk to an average, everyday person who, like, says, I love wine, and they're like, pour me a glass of Moscato. Like, they're not going to understand that.
Yeah.
Very true. Cassie, do you have one?
I don't, because I just, you just hand me a bottle and I drink it and I say, ooh, that's good. But I don't ever remember what I drank. And a lot of it, again, I don't remember the name. But we had one just like last couple podcasts ago, that one where you were saying, oh, this is really good. That was, I don't know what it was, but.
Yeah, it was Molly Duker.
No, this was the Rioja that we had two episodes ago.
Oh, the Rioja.
Yeah, that was really good. And yeah. I was just like, yeah, I'd probably spend extra money on that.
That one wasn't expensive.
I know. But I'm saying, like, if somebody, you know, was like, oh, this is, I don't know how much it was, but it was $35, I'd probably pay it. Okay. Thinking, you know, from a standpoint, like, I'm not a wine expert, so an average Joe, yeah, I'd pay that amount, thinking, oh, this is, like, the greatest thing, and it costs, oh, yeah, I'll pay more. So.
I think my experience with it, probably, I'm probably too trendy on this, and this is going to relate. I finally did try for, like, a year and a half, I actually tried, probably longer than that, to get my hands on some Pappy Van Winkle. And I finally did at a bar in Dallas when it was you, myself, and Eden. And I ended up buying two shots of it at $50 each. In retrospect, I'm happy I tried it, even though at the expense. Though, reflecting on it, I realized that you're not paying for the taste, you're paying just for the exclusivity of it, that it's really hard to get.
Mm-hmm. But did you like it? Did you love it?
Didn't love it. I don't think it's better than Eagle Rare, and I'm not even being facetious. I don't think it's better than the Weller 112. It's good, but I think it's just the name behind it and how hard it is to get your hands on a bottle.
Sure, and I will say, because I was in Kentucky, I did ask about it to some bartenders, and the one at the airport actually while I was waiting on my boyfriend to get there. He was on a different flight, but she said it's like a lottery system. So I thought it was crazy, just like not even every retailer can get it. Like there's some crazy lottery, so you get lucky and you get some or you don't.
Yeah, like in Lubbock, only half a case would come in every year, and it was already claimed that the liquor manager of the distribution company would always take a bottle, and then Specs would get the other ones. And that's just how it
went. Wow.
But the one I want to try is probably that cognac, the Louis the Eight cognac, that like $3,000 a bottle cognac. I want to try that, even though it's like $80 a shot. I just feel like I have to be at an event that's classy as fuck in like a suit, a tuxedo, with the like cigar holding in my finger like, and like my left lapel someone. Pocket to really like embrace an $80 drink at any event. But that's probably...
I have a question about...
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead. What's the question?
Did you shoot the puppy or did you sip the pappy?
I sipped the pappy.
Oh, good. This makes me happy.
But
happy pappy.
The person I was drinking it with definitely shot it.
But he no.
But he was probably drunk before we get there.
Angel.
It was not Angel. It was not Angel.
Oh, okay.
But he was like, okay. If you're going to drink it, I want it too. And I was like, okay. And he shot it, and he was like, ah, it's all right. I was like, damn! You didn't even, like, appreciate it. But, no.
Oh, gosh.
I'm happy to say that I've had it now, though, so I can mark that off the list. And if I could still come across a bottle, I could probably spend a good amount on it, but not enough to actually afford a bottle. Like 5 years ago, yeah. I would have been okay. 10 years ago, I could have easily got it. Now I think they're averaging for like once they hit the resale market, $500 to $800 for the youngest one.
Yeah.
The older ones are in the thousands. So that's a no go for me. Not even a thought of an opportunity.
Maybe good to get a young one and just hold on to it.
You can't even get those, though.
Oh.
I know, but if you could.
But, I just need to be that 21-year-old who just won the Powerball.
What?
A 21-year-old won the Powerball. And he's cashing out. He's taking $281 million home with him. He already set up an LLC to get the money in so he can get a tax shelter for it. I was like, this 21-year-old has it together.
I don't. Oh, man. From Texas?
Hey, I'm,
no, he's I'm not down. From Texas.
Where is he
I
from?
Think Connecticut or something, somewhere like that, right?
Yeah, it's some little. It's not Connecticut, but it's something like that to where it's like, ah, I didn't expect it there. Where was it? Not New York. It's something where.
Delaware?
No, it's actually Florida. My bad.
Oh,
of course,
man.
It's Florida.
First state.
So that means he's going to die, but.
Oh.
It's Florida. Like somebody on bath salts humping an alligator is going to like bite his face off.
That's messed up.
Because it's Florida. There's no other explanation for it.
So. There's a lot of 21 and you're in Florida. The odds are not stacked in your favor.
No, he has to move if he wants to survive.
Yeah, I'd probably move.
True story.
Be like, from Texas, where do you want to live?
I need to change my name.
You know, it's funny because I was looking at pictures of people that won the lotto, and some of them, like, this one couple, I guess, won, and so they lifted up the check just high enough that it was, like, right below their eyes. And so all you saw were, like, the tops of their heads. It's like, so-and-so and so-and-so won the lotto. And they're like, I don't want to be known.
Yeah, if I'm in a state where I have to take the dumb picture,
yeah,
I'm definitely changing my name.
What?
If like I have to take a picture and put it out publicly that this is the person who won, yeah, I'm changing my name.
I'm just gonna.
But if you're in one of those other states, like the person who won the lotto last week still hasn't picked it up in New England, but he doesn't have to. Or New Hampshire, mm-hmm. He doesn't. Whoever won it doesn't have to state their name and take a public picture.
Oh.
So they just get to be like, take my money, thank you.
I don't know. I would like totally put a wig on. Like drastic makeup.
Some states require you that you have to give your name and you have to like claim it in your like natural state, like close to what your driver's license looks like.
No, that's fine. That's why I said I'm changing my name afterwards.
Yeah.
As soon as I get the check, like changing the name.
Well, that means I have to change my name too.
No, you can keep your name. It's just if people ask you, I'll be like, I don't know those people.
That's messed up.
And they'll be like, hey, do you
what
know
what
about
this? Christopher?
He'll have to change his name.
That's messed up.
Why? The name is the same.
Hey, Cassie, better to change your name than have somebody be like, try to kidnap some lottery winner's kid.
That's true.
Isn't there a movie that just came out
that they
have to reshoot? All for the money or something like that?
Yeah, I think it just came out, but it was only in theaters for like a week or something like that. But,
it's clearly,
all the money in the world.
Yeah, the money in the world. It's clearly Oscar bait. That they got it right at the deadline just so that they could get it into the Oscars and Golden Globes.
Yeah, I think he already got nominated in the Golden Globes, the guy who replaced Kevin Spacey. Christopher Plummer, who did the reshoots for like a week and stuff like that. So,
I'm still unsure what Christopher Plummer looks like, so I'm going to have to look that up.
Let's see.
Okay, he does a lot of character acting. I could nerd-wise tell you that he was in the six-star... Yeah, you know him and everything.
Yeah,
He looks like the affordable version of Michael Caine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you can't get Michael Caine... You get Christopher Plummer. And he's probably a better actor.
No, I've seen him in a lot of things. He just doesn't, I don't know.
Similar.
What movies has he been in?
Who's that actress in How to Get Away with Murder?
Violet Davis?
Yeah, Viola Davis. Viola Davis, but if you need like an affordable version, you go and get Alfre Woodard.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's all these types of actors across Hollywood.
That's the thing. Yeah, you know, if you're like, oh, I want this person, but, you know, they're A, right? Is it A rank?
Yeah, like if they're an A actor,
like,
we need a budget.
We need a B, a B actor. Then you just kind of find somebody that's kind of equivalent to that, but.
Which one is Emma Watson, and then there's the other Emma?
There's Emma Watson, who's in Harry Potter and Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then Emma Stone?
Yeah, so Emma Stone is now the A-list actor, and Emma Watson is like the A.2, so if you can't afford Emma Stone, who's won an Oscar, then you have to go get Emma Watson.
Uh-huh, okay.
But they're all there to replace Lindsay Lohan, who would have had those roles.
Yeah.
If she didn't get hooked on crack.
If she didn't get on crack.
I mean, allegedly, don't sue me, Lindsay Lohan.
Sorry. You're nice.
I'm not sure she's been charged, so, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't want to get sued by Lindsay Lohan. She almost sued the milk commercial. You remember that commercial with, like, the drunk baby?
She did try to sue the Grand Theft Auto people.
No. Oh, for the cover?
Yeah.
I'm looking up the Lindsay Lohan story now on the milk. The E-Trade baby commercial, where it's like, where they said the girlfriend's the milkaholic.
Uh-huh.
You don't remember those commercials? It was a big Super Bowl commercial.
I saw it, but I don't understand.
Maybe I didn't remember it.
I don't understand the connection, though.
And so I'll add it at the end of the show, but Lindsay Lohan has reportedly settled the $100 million lawsuit, which means they gave her nothing, in connection with the Super Bowl ad featuring a milkaholic baby named Lindsay. Lohan apparently felt that the commercial was mocking to her many drug and alcohol related run-ins with the law. E-Trade called Lohan claims meritless and said she's not the world's only Lindsay.
Yeah.
Her lawyer said Tuesday the Mean Girls movie star reached a settlement with the brokerage before withdrawing a lawsuit a day earlier. UHA and E-Trade Financial says the terms of the agreement are confidential. Meanwhile, she still has a warrant out for arrest at the time of this writing, which was in 2010.
Oh, okay. So a little dated, but...
I saw that commercial, and I didn't even connect her with...
No. Lillian. But that's the drugs talking.
Yes, but yeah. That's
oh, my God! I don't believe they made a commercial!
It's all about me! No. You were probably drunk at the time. Probably thought it was you.
Have you seen her new videos where now she picked up an accent from the Middle East or from like Mordor?
Yeah.
Where it's the weirdest accent in the world.
I saw a video of her and, she changed her accent like Madonna did. And so she's, I guess, kind of sounds like Madonna. I don't know. But yeah, it was weird.
Because she was defending
and
Harvey
Weinstein.
And she lives
in... Where does she live? She lives
Dubai.
In Dubai. And
I mean, she's
they all love her.
Billionaires.
Yeah, they all love her. They're like, she's always on TV and talking and on television. And she went ahead and changed her religion. I was like, man. It was like kind of like a 360 then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was looking at other B-list actors to see if anybody comes up that could have been someone bigger or replaces someone always. Yeah, nothing's coming up immediately. But, alright. I think we do have one more story, and this is Drunk Logic, the segment with Mike. Man allegedly stole police car for a beer run. A beer-craving barefooted man hopped into an unattended police car in Sacramento to go and buy a cold one, according to the report. Zachary Samaha, 22, allegedly swiped the patrol car on Saturday before driving to an A1 liquor store where he bought a 40-ounce bottle of malt beer, which he took a swig as he headed out of the store. Moments later, he was taken down by a local man who made a citizen's arrest and held him on the ground before the cops arrived. The Good Samaritan, identified as Chris Marzen, had spotted the patrol car swerving with the headlights off, then hitting a telephone pole. Marzen called 911 to report the crash when he saw the driver get out of the vehicle wearing sweatpants and no shoes. "I'm on the phone with dispatch," I said. "Look, you got a guy who just stole a patrol car." Marzen added, I was concerned he was going to come out with one of the weapons in the vehicles. He made off with the patrol car while the officers were responding to an incident nearby. Police arrested him on charges of vehicle theft and driving under the influence.
Just for a...
Do you go to jail for longer or shorter if you go for, like, the full kebab? Like, Grand Theft Auto, but intoxicated Grand Theft Auto of a police vehicle.
I guess I'm just... It makes me laugh.
He's a legend amongst his loser friends, probably.
Oh, he absolutely is. And the fact that he's only 22 but looks like 30.
He'll be 85. He'll be telling that story.
Yeah, that's true. My thing is that he just went for a 40. And I'm like, really?
Not even multiple 40s for his friends.
You can go get some bottle of liquor. Like, I don't... Really? Just that?
Guys, he stole a police car. Clearly he wasn't working with all of his faculties.
Well, clearly he didn't know what he was driving.
I feel like he knew. I feel like someone dared him.
You think so?
Yeah.
Someone dared him? Let me see his picture again.
Or what is it on Atlanta?
He's so happy.
Like 40s, Mickey's, you're drinking it wrong. You're supposed to drink it in champagne glasses.
Maybe he was trying to get arrested. I mean, that's the only thing. But like, what can put me back into the system? I think oh, there's the police car. I'll just take it and go get a beer. I'm bound to get arrested. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
I don't know. I know the cop who, the officer who went into whatever the disturbance was next door mm-hmm. and came out and saw his car missing was either, I'm going to kill this dude or, oh shit, I'm going to get fired.
I would say the later.
See, I think it's the, yeah.
Because, I mean, it was so the guy just, or the police officer just like flung open the door and just ran off, like,
Well, most officers leave their vehicles on when they show up to a scene.
Do they?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, yeah, just in case you get, radio calls or have to respond to something else more important.
And they always have, like, the computers running in there and everything else. So they need to keep the power going and the alternator charging. It's just the threat is, sure, you could take it, but most likely you assume the police are going to beat the crap out of you if they catch you stealing their car.
And plus, it's got tracking. I mean,
yeah,
GPS.
That's what I was going to say. Does it have tracking on it?
Yeah, like he couldn't get far. He wasn't going to be able to go and hide
it. Well, that's what makes me think that it's like, oh, yeah, I'll just steal a car.
Yeah. He doesn't even look hammered.
No, he doesn't. He just looks tired.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, yeah, now I'm back in. Great.
Finally, The Rock has returned. In prison. Wow. All right. I think that's the end of the agenda. Did anybody else have anything to add?
Nope.
Ooh. Oh, before we go, there was something I was reading in another article before, and I wanted to look it up. Where is it? Now I can't find it. But apparently... apparently, Wells Fargo has an entire department dedicated to researching, like, they label it the Wells Fargo Tobacco and Alcohol Research Firm that just researches tobacco and alcohol investments. How do I get hired in this?
Yeah, that's different.
That sounds amazing. When is your bank going to come out with this department?
You are
a top 10 banking in the nation.
I'm not aware of that at all. I would assume marketing would be the department to look.
Would you like me to reach out to marketing?
They're not going to say anything to you.
It'd be like, excuse me.
Wow.
See, she won't make me hot toddies. She won't put me in contact with the people to make them great. It's okay. Show's gone off the rails.
But yeah, I'm not familiar with that. So they just research all day and that's it?
Hopefully it's research at the bar, but I imagine it's a lot more boring than that. I'm thinking it's more the stolen baby from This Is Us sitting in the office all night.
That's messed up.
It is messed up. They stole a baby. All right.
Still haven't seen that show. So interesting.
They'll be at the end of the second season this year. So prior to the next season, you'll be able to catch up. And did you see Game of Thrones said no prequels till 2020, which is comforting as they're not finishing the finale until 2019. Thanks a lot, yep. Neckbeard.
Pretty much, I am, I have to say it, I'm kind of down with this. I just hope the maker that he gets one of, like, a book out before the next Game of Thrones. It's supposed to be last year, hopefully going to be this year. We'll see.
He's a super multi-millionaire now. If James Patterson could write 10 books a year with a bunch of ghostwriters, Neckbeard should be able to pull out one book to finish off his series in one year. I'm not asking for a whole collection. I'm just asking you to finish the story. Like, we're here. We rode with you. Finish the story. And if not, pay somebody and just put your name on it. I'm okay with that, too. But, yeah, maybe that's why they held it up. Did they give any indication what the real reason was for waiting till 2019?
To finish
the show?
Yeah, pretty much they want the show done first and everything. And since the show's not coming out till 2019, then that means that the prequels can't come out until after the show is done.
Oh, I was referencing more of why it's taken so long to finish this last book. Like, why did they push back the premiere? Because it was supposed to be the summer of 2018, and now it's moved to 19.
Why is it taking him so long to finish the dang book?
No,
that's a good question.
No, the TV show. Like, why did they skip a year?
Just to give him time, finish the book. So
they're doing it purposely to let him finish the book.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not even going to be able to finish all of the series, unfortunately. Because unfortunately, this book and then one more book after that. So
he needs to hire some ghostwriters. He has enough money now where he has no excuse. Or call up James Patterson. Call up John Grisham. Any of them.
Hell, I'll finish it for him. You know, he won't have to give me very much money.
Yeah, there's probably enough fan fiction out there where he wouldn't have to be that creative. There's people who's thought through every way the show could end. He just has to fill in the gaps. And have some incest that he loves so much. Some pillaging, some head cutting, dragons burning stuff.
Yeah.
Ice walkers icing stuff.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
Cassie got excited a little too much.
What? I want to see dragons. I want to see ice people walking. Maybe talking.
This show is brought to you by the Spirit of Exploration. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, brought a spirit of exploration and smallpox to the New World. Spirit of Exploration, a finely crafted grappa brandy that's perfect companion for your own adventure. Crafted the same way for over 25 generations, the Gugliotta family is committed to quality over quantity in the eradication of smallpox across the New World with the Christopher Columbus Foundation. 5% of every bottle bought will go towards the purchase of blankets for natives of Spanish protectorates around the world.
I can.